You're ready.
I'm ready.
And this is your main man foe testing Ichi Nisan, testing Shigo. Alan, what you got?
I am here. Ready to go.
What you click clacking on?
I'm being Casey Jones on the rooftops right now.
Oh, I was just being Usagi in the Mirage Dimension.
Nice.
So, as you can hear, welcome to SmavCast. Yet again, we are click-clacking on controllers because we originally intended to make this a video game night, a little treat for you guys, something we've been working on a little behind the scenes, kind of a plan that we had a long time ago to start streaming some games and things and podcasting while we play. So we're going to table that for this week, but that is coming in the very, very near future. And so get used to that sound of clicking because right. it's not going to stop anytime soon. So keep an eye on not just our podcast feed, our normal podcast feed, because the audio will always be available there, but also on our YouTube. I can't remember. I think it's just YouTube/Saber Martial Arts or Saber Martial Arts Foundation, whatever. Search for Saber Martial Arts on YouTube and you will find us. We're right there. We'll hopefully be doing some not just lives, but recorded podcasts with gaming and more Holocron stuff, all that mixing the visual with the audible. So that being said, this is, like I said, I think this is episode 32. This is 33 now. Oh my gosh. We're getting old, Alan. We're getting old. What's up? Anything new? I talked to you just a couple days ago. Nobody knows that, but they will by the time the next episode releases.
Right. Nothing at the moment is brand new, except for we have confirmation that our panel is going to be a Sunday at noon, May 26th.
Awesome. That is, for anybody who's been listening over the past few episodes of SmavCast, or anybody who is just now tuning in, because as Stan Lee said, every issue is somebody's first issue. This is in regards to Saber Mayhem, which is Alan's, hold on 1 second, I just realized I'm not even plugged in. We're plugged in, but we don't have our power plugged in, so I'm running on normal energizers right now. 3 seconds. That was almost exactly 3 seconds. I've run on normal energizers before, and only bad things happen. So,
of course,
that bunny stops beating when it comes to recording equipment. So anyway. We're talking about Saber Mayhem, taking place at Strategicon, which is going to be at the L.A. Hilton, correct, Alan?
That's correct. The L.A. Hilton on from May 20, May 24th through 27th. So it's like 4 days. But we are only there Saturday and Sunday.
Okay. And what we're talking about specifically is a podcast panel, if you will, that we're going to do, which is going to be on the 26th at noon Pacific, which is 3 p.m. Eastern. And that panel is going to be fun. I mean, we're going to talk to different people who teach Saber stuff. You're going to recognize some people. If you're able to actually attend in person, awesome. Go for it. Highly recommend it.
Great.
But if you're not able to attend in person, we will try our best to make sure things are as live as possible or as quickly updated as possible. So, again, keep your eyes and ears peeled on not just our normal podcast network, but on our YouTube and our Instagram as well. And you're going to recognize people from the podcast. If you listen to the show regularly, you recognize people like Kay and, of course, Alan, myself, You may hear from some of our other affiliates who you've probably heard from on the show before. But there's also going to be some new voices, and that is always something that I'm personally interested in. So, Saber Mayhem, the day after the original Star Wars release, May 26th. It's only taken me like 6 or 7 recordings to finally memorize all that information, so. There we go. There are some May the 4th events coming up. I know Saber Light Nights, one of our favorite teachers, Courtney Monroe, and you guys have heard from Ryan, and Saber Light's done tournaments. They're one of our affiliate schools. Great group. I believe they're doing a May the 4th event at Laughing Dragon Kung Fu in Charlottesville, Virginia. I believe it's like an introductory SMA class, basically. So if you guys would like to learn some high-quality martial arts from a great teacher and other great students, go check out Saberlight Nights May the 4th event. And I believe if you just go to saberlightnights.com, you will be able to find information on anything they do. They usually keep that pretty well updated. But also check out their Instagram at saberlightnights, because I know they just posted something about it today. So, yeah, check in on that. That's coming up in a week now. So this episode will, I'm going to knock on wood, this episode should be at least a few days ahead of that. So anybody in that area can go check that out. I know also Aiken Saber Academy in South Carolina, Commander Tony, and I believe they're doing multiple events around May the 4th. So if you are in or near Aiken, South Carolina, check in on Aiken Saber Academy, usually through Facebook, right, Alan? That's kind of where they're most active.
I believe that's true. Facebook and maybe some Instagram too. I'm thinking they're branching out.
Yeah, I know Tony's got a personal Instagram, but I haven't seen an Aiken Instagram, and hopefully that changes soon. But if not, definitely on Facebook, and I don't believe you have to have a Facebook to find their business page and information. So check them out if you're in that area. I believe he's also doing something in Augusta, Georgia. I don't know how far that is from Aiken, but close enough that they're doing something out there. So all of our homies on the East Coast got something to do as well. I haven't decided yet, Alan, but I'm thinking I might try to do some sort of live workout that weekend, some sort of live SMA workout. Maybe we'll get the two of us, or we'll get Kay involved somehow. So I haven't heard much as far as West Coast events for May the 4th, because I know a lot of them, they're going to be hanging out with Strategicon and those types of things. But if anybody knows of anything, feel free to reach out to us, sabermaoutreach@gmail.com, and let me know what's good. Awesome. Alan, I think that's the housekeeping. Did I forget any housekeeping?
You have all the housekeeping that I have, so.
Good. Yes. Good. So that was like 5 minutes of housekeeping. That was probably too long, but good information, because there's like this time of year, I've said this before, this time of year there's always something to latch on to saber-wise. So and now with the way we've been able to keep up with the podcast and the YouTube and things, there's just going to be more. You don't even have to leave your house for all the fun stuff that we're going to be giving to you. So that's great.
Yep.
Little shout outs at the end of the episode today, Alan. Don't let me forget. We want to do some shout outs at the end today. Other than that, let's talk a little. I want to tease everybody a little with something I sent you. I sent you, after I worked out on the bag tonight, because nobody showed up at my class because the weather was kind of nice all day, and then it rained last minute, but I guess nobody got the memo that it rained, so nobody showed up to class tonight. And so I hit the bag for a little bit, and then I practiced some forms and things, and I sent you a very sorry version of my form that I've been talking about on the show here for a few weeks, which is my traditional nunchuck form. It is so stressful for me, and I'm trying not to like let the anxiety take over, but you give me two nunchucks and my brain just leaves the conversation and my body takes over.
Sure.
You give me one nunchuck and it's like, now I'm patting my head and rubbing my tummy at the same time. You know what I mean? Which literally doing, I'm pretty good at, but figuratively not so good at. So anyway, I wanted to send that to you because I thought you would find it interesting. I sent it to Kay as well, and I'm curious what his thoughts are as well. But what were some of the things right off the bat? Because you asked me one thing after I sent it to you, which was, is that from Iron Tiger? So first of all, what stood out to you? Why did you happen to ask me that particular question? Did it not seem too kung fu-y to you?
Well, to be completely honest, the nunchucks are less of a Chinese weapon than they are a Japanese weapon.
Right.
If you're doing kung fu, then usually it's usually you're not doing nunchucks, you're doing a sword or a staff of some sort.
Yes.
Which is why I immediately asked, like,
I'm grinning at the microphone. You can't see me, but I'm grinning at the microphone. This is a frothy conversation. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, totally. And that's actually one of the first things I asked my coworker, my coach, Sifu, whatever. The guy above me. The guy who's teaching me and helping me get towards my black belt. So this is for my purple sash right now. Which in our system, after that comes, I believe after that is brown, then red, then black. I think that's the way it goes. It might be red, then brown, then black. I have to look. But right now I'm at orange. So this is the second weapons form we've done. The first one was staff, which was a little more kung fu in visual appeal, as it were, and the stances and things. I should probably send you a video of that just for like a cross reference. But it's a lot more of what you would think of when you think traditional, like wushu or Chinese martial arts. The nunchuck form took me by surprise when I saw it on the list as well. I expected to see, I don't know. I don't even know what the first like flexible weapon would be in Chinese martial arts. But the reasoning given for teaching nunchuck was same reason I give people for why I teach nunchuck, which is there's no better weapon to teach you how to respect the weapon and not hit yourself, except maybe a sharp sword, right? Like, there's very few other weapons that will bite back the instant you make a mistake. And so by teaching the nunchuck to a slightly more advanced belt rank, you're getting them ready for the swords and things that they're going to do in red and black belt or brown and black belt. That was the reasoning I was given. Now, it is very, very, in my opinion, Kabuto-esque. Like very Okinawan and Japanese looking,
right?
The movements and things, except for the kicks. The kicks seemed appropriate, but I don't know. I kind of want to. It's a juicy form to me, and it's really interesting to me because I think we talked briefly before about how the grandmaster in the United States of this style of kung fu or our style of Iron Tiger. I'm sure there's like 100 Iron Tiger Kung Fus in the world, but ours, it was very much a kind of thing where this gentleman had to escape China, had to go to Thailand, had to go to, I believe, Okinawa as well. Spent some time in Hawaii and in LA and, you know, sort of that American hub of martial arts as well before, you know, coaching the American Wushu or, the Wushu and the Sanda teams. So this guy, you know, he had to incorporate other things because, it's the kind of thing where he would teach Chinese martial arts in Thailand and secretly go when his students weren't looking and go learn Muay Thai, you know, at night from the Thai teach Chinese martial arts to the Thai guy, right. Learn Thai martial arts from him in return. But nobody's students can know that they're learning the other style because at this time in the world, like, it wasn't seen as a good thing to share martial arts. But I don't know. I'm just curious what kind of was going through your head while you were watching this sort of un-Chinese Chinese form.
Well, it's interesting because like there is a contingent of Chinese practitioners that do nunchucks, right? Because it is very, very much a
so not just Bruce Lee, huh?
Right. Well, because there is a few people, because mainly, I mean, you can give the props to Bruce Lee for making it
cool,
popular.
Yeah,
making it cool. But mainly, there is a group, and I don't remember them off the top of my head. There are probably several, but there is something called the two section staff. That
I've not seen that. Very interesting.
Yeah, it is a weed thresher. It's a staff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense when you say it that way.
Yeah, it's basically a big staff with a nunchuck at the end. So it's a uneven nunchuck, if you can think of it that way. And then slowly over time, the longer end got shorter and shorter and shorter until it got to the even ends.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So two section staff.
So,
which is what a nunchuck is for anybody who's like, really not familiar. But so, very short by comparison.
Yeah. So so what you would normally see is normal size of a nunchuck. Imagine like one side of it being a nunchuck, the other side being the length of a staff, and then over time it slowly got shorter and shorter, and so. Till both ends became basically nunchucks, but there it is a couple of schools out there that do it, and there's a very popular video of a guy that uses the hollow cord nunchucks, but they're like I believe the nunchucks he uses are aluminum, and he has a cord in them, and he does them really well, kind of like he's kind of like in a Wing Chun style outfit.
Oh, interesting.
So that style of from that part of China, and he's just doing it effortlessly, I might add.
Yeah.
And you know, there are schools out there that do it, and I don't know who would dispute this, but if you can twirl around a pair of nunchucks, you just feel like a martial artist.
It is true.
There's nothing about it. This is like, you don't feel like Conan. Man. You don't feel like anybody else but Bruce Lee.
Feel like Nunchuck Norris, know? Yeah.
Yeah, basically. So just know, like, as soon as you get those, and even like the newest John Wick, there's a nunchuck scene.
Yes, I heard something about this.
It's a fun little nunchuck scene, because that movie series is a series made by stuntmen that did all those scenes, they know how to like pull it off, and
the choreographer
is just really fun because they did everything they could to get away from the good old Bruce Lee, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And actually stick to like, if somebody hit you with nunchucks, what would it look like? And they did a really good job.
I need to get this footage so that maybe some of the because some of the kids in the footage, they were minors at the time. But we used the Action Flex nunchucks from Century. Which is like the 900th time we've said that on the show. And spoiler alert, some upcoming stuff, we're going to be saying that a lot more. But the Action Flex nunchucks are great because they are the right like size, diameter, and sort of cord length feel of like a traditional nunchuck as opposed to like a demonstration nunchuck, which would be real short, really lightweight, almost balsa wood, right? Like real lightweight pine, real flashy wrapping on it. These would be like your octagonal traditional or traditional round wooden nunchucks, but they're made completely of foam. And the cord is really high quality. It does not come out of the nunchucks. And we would spar with these things all the time, especially like, and I've talked about this in our previous chats, but when I would teach Ataru or get some kids kind of involved in it, especially if they were already pretty good with the nunchucks, like that was an easy transition given the Action Flex nunchucks, and then you give them the sword. And they're pretty, they can understand the concepts of the motions a lot more easily for Ataru with sometimes with that. And I had a couple kids, man, they were way better than me with the nunchucks. Like I remember this one kid, we called him Sea Bass. He was like a little miniature, but he understood how like, he just understood how the nunchucks moved around him. Like he was not fighting the nunchucks at all. They were just moving around him and making it happen. And he was awesome. And his older brother was like equally good with all weapons. Staff was his like, you know, he was like a Donatello, a regular Donatello, but give him some nunchucks, give him a couple of swords. Man, he was like one of my best tomahawk students. Like he understood that weapon in a scary way, which was good. That was cool. Anyway, so I don't know. I wanted to bring that up because, and maybe I'll share a video of it. Maybe not. But I wanted to bring that up because first of all, like you said, not really a whole ton of Chinese schools using nunchucks. So that was kind of unique to me. But also just the very unorthodox sort of mannerisms within that form and everything. I just found it interesting. And we've talked before about like developing your eye for recognizing the nuances of different martial arts and you know, a variety of martial arts. Just like somebody who dances would understand the difference between all of the Latin, you know, I don't understand all the differences. And I even speak a little Spanish and I don't understand all the differences between the dances and things, right? Like that's not the same thing. So I think it's, you know, the same as somebody who, you know, a chef who understands like which spices are in every bite he takes. You know, as a martial artist, you start to understand, like you watch a UFC fight. Oh, that person's probably got a Taekwondo background, and lo and behold, at the bottom of the screen, there it is, black belt in Taekwondo and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Right. Like, so anyway, yeah, I thought you'd find that video interesting. And I'm curious next time we talk to Kay, who is coming through with for us, hope, you know, fingers crossed, knocks on woods and all, with a very cool guest in the very near future here. Maybe we'll chat with him a little bit about that. And actually, maybe that guest would have an idea concerning some of that cultural exchange, because I think that's right up his alley of expertise. Yeah, dude, that cultural exchange thing, like, again, we've talked with Kay about this a lot before, but man, that American martial arts, like, phenomenon of, like, this, like, the melting pot thing, but happening with martial arts in a big way. And in my opinion, it hasn't even slowed down like a little. Like with MMA, it's only gotten like, especially now with MMA, I feel like there's a lot of people who are starting to sort of come around back to traditional techniques, start to see the value in traditional martial arts again, not just traditional jiu-jitsu or traditional wrestling or traditional boxing, but like the karate guys, the kung fu guys, the, you know, the salat practitioners and what have you. They're sort of making a little bit of a comeback. Most of the champions now are either from a traditional background or strikers that strike like traditional martial artists. We do have some good black belts in jiu-jitsu as well. Like Pantoja is a phenomenal champion, excellent fighter, great striker, amazing grappler. But yeah, like that traditionalist strikers art is starting to come back around. But also just the molding of different techniques and things like, it's no longer like Muay Thai versus karate or jiu-jitsu versus wrestling. It's like, it really is like this mixed person versus this mixed person. This person's got these three or four skills in the bag. This person's got these three or four. And sometimes there's a parallel, but, as a fan of martial arts, not just a martial artist, I find it incredibly fascinating. And I even find it fascinating when you get like your thug street fighter type people in there, your brawlers and such. Because in and of itself, that becomes a martial art for them, right? Like that's their little gem so action going on. I don't know. This America place, I'm not here to disparage other places in the world. I just feel like here in America, we do really have sort of an open arm policy for martial arts in a general sense. I know there are cults everywhere, who don't venture outside their own dojos, but I don't know. Thoughts on the topic, Alan?
Yeah, I mean, so we talked a little bit about traditional versus, I guess, modern or traditional versus the traditional way of doing things versus the tactical way of doing things, because there is a tradition constantly being created, right? So either way, as long as you're training, you know, you're hopefully winning as long as you're being trained correctly. So a good example of that, I think, is when a traditional martial artist goes to an MMA gym or an MMA fighter goes to a traditional gym. Because when you do a little bit of both, you create your own, right? That's kind of the cool thing about martial arts is it's art.
As a traditional martial artist who now works at an MMA gym, I 100% agree with everything you're saying.
Yeah, but it's art, right? So you're looking at how to express yourself and how your body expresses that movement. So nobody does the same movements the same exact way because of all the different ways that you could possibly do something. So when you look at some of this stuff, you can kind of start by saying, yes, I'm a traditional martial artist. I do kata. I do, you know, forms. I do my traditional stuff here. But then, you know, you have the people that we know and love that say, that's all cute. That's very cute, but that wouldn't work in a cage. Or that doesn't work in the streets.
That's my favorite people. Like I see them all the time, and I love them.
Yeah.
You're my people.
But then those people, you know, fail to see the value in, you know, being able to stand still and still your mind and calm yourself in stressful situations, which is one of the biggest things you get out of practicing traditional martial arts.
Or how about just being able to stand still and listen to the coach?
Right.
Right. So like that's part of it too.
Whole thing. But part of that too is the glorification of certain things, right? So I will admit I decided to do martial arts when I saw Jackie Chan in The Drunken Master, you know, and saw like how he kind of moved differently than anybody else I've ever seen before. And went, yeah, I want to do that. That looks very pretty. It looks very cool. It looks like he can take on like a dozen guys at once.
Right.
You know, and win. And, you know, I was five and I was rolling around my house and probably bumping into everything and destroying my parents' furniture. But
love it.
It stuck with me. That spark stuck with me. You know, but then there's now the UFC. You know, and even back then there was boxing, right? So you got Sugar Ray Leonard and you got all that stuff, but it didn't look as cool to me.
Even Professional Karate Association, kickboxing, just not exactly the same.
Right. But that didn't look as cool to me as Jackie Chan taking on like a gang of people.
Right.
So I stuck with, you know what, I want to do Kung Fu. Like my hero, Jackie Chan. And then, of course, you know, you go down the rabbit hole of martial arts movies and it never stops. But then I can also see the good and the bad in some of those movies, you know. And I think mainly a lot of those movies, the bad guy was the traditional martial artist that took it too far. The bad guy was a traditional martial artist that you know, wanted to go outside the tradition. You know, so maybe my mind has been shaped by that. But in the end, it's not bad. You know, it's just like, okay, that person may have been doing bad things using that traditional martial art. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't. Mm-hmm. It's not bad to actually explore outside of your tradition is what I'm trying to say.
Keep going.
But then you have the other side of the spectrum where nowadays you have, you know, a lot of combative arts and combative sports and combative federations all over the world that will, you know, glorify the art of putting your fist through somebody's face or choking them until they pass out, or, you know, so there's a lot of a lot more of that around than when I was, you know, growing up. So maybe that's what that generation sees as cool. Because that's what they're surrounded by.
See, now,
you know what I mean?
I'm starting to think kind of what you were just saying about, like, oh, this was the hero or this was the bad guy. Like, mm-hmm. I'm thinking back like Bloodsport, right? Mm-hmm. That's one movie that kind of shaped my, we'll just say it piqued my interest in martial arts. It was also, anyway, that's a movie. Maybe that's a movie we should roast one time because that is a movie. but like I think of Chun-Li every time I think
that
of
that was peak Van Damme.
Oh my gosh! Yes,
it was only downhill from there.
But I think of Bolo Young's character Chun-Li in that movie as like the consummate martial arts villain, right? Like everything you're talking about. You know, he was a traditional martial arts character. Bolo Young is indeed a traditional martial artist, a great one. But also, I don't know, man. That bad guy was always the one that wanted to, like, put their fist through somebody's face and choke somebody to death and this and that, break their leg and... no mercy in this dojo and no pain in this dojo, whatever the line is. And so for me, like when I encounter those characters in the gym, like first of all, my job is to not become your steak basically on your plate, but also I kind of like they're automatically like the villain to me a little bit. Like, if that's what you're in, even if you're an MMA fighter or you're a jiu-jitsu competitor, something that's maybe not as something where competition is really what you're there for. Still, you kind of like if you're that guy or that girl, you're kind of a still, right? You're still kind of, you know, 34 minutes. Fode, 34 minutes. You got to add a little droid sound there. So anyway, I guess that's my point. Like, yes, some organizations do glorify like the blood, the guts, the glory, but also there are organizations that do strike a good balance. And I do think the UFC is one of them, where some fighters, it's about that. But to me, they're the villains. They're the heel. And that's their job. And that's okay. They're getting paid. That's the shtick they want to roll with. Go for it. But I'm more of a fan of the Wonder Boys, the George St. Pierre's, you know, the Max Holloway's, the people who, by the way, my God, what a win. The people who really express like the love of the art of fighting, not just the love of putting their knuckles through somebody's nose, which it's okay if that's what you're there for. Like, it's okay. But you know, you are a little bit of a villain. It's okay to be a villain too. Like, don't, like, ask Doug Dearman, right? Like, it's okay to be a Sith. If that's your thing. Don't kill your friends in training. And maybe a little bit of appreciation of the traditional, like the bowing, you know, like I bow to everybody.
Well, this is a fun tangent here is there are certain traditions that are, you know, that have been just recently made. Right. So even in mixed martial arts, there is the touching of the gloves, the bowing, the, you know, the referee in the middle.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's agreed upon space. That's all tradition.
And a lot of times, with bitter rivals, like the coaches will offer the other fighter water at the end, or regardless of who won and lost, even bitter enemies will hug at the end. There's that whole pomp and circumstance of the tradition is still there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, there are certain things that we in the West don't really see a lot of. Like, for example, I believe that it's in Muay Thai. There's actually before they go in there and destroy each other with their, you know.
Oh, you're talking about the dance that they do.
Yeah, it's. There's a whole, the like, each dojo actually does, you know.
Yeah, like, each lineage has its own, and I believe you're correct that even there are subsets of within those lineages that create their own as well. Like, yeah, it's basically, the way I understand it, and if I understand this inaccurately, please message us and let us know the real deal. But the way I kind of understand it at a base level is, the dance is sort of like a blessing almost of the ring, the opponents, the knowledge, the practice, the coaches. You're acknowledging all these things, yourself, your hard work, the mistakes, the successes, right? But you're doing it with these symbolic gestures, and you know, it's sort of like a little that you do your fighting stances in it. There's bowing involved. There's tapping of gloves and elbow. And, you know, there's all kinds of things involved. It's really cool, though. Alan, I'm so glad you brought this up, but it's just so cool to watch it. It's kind of like when you see a haka for the first time, you're like, oh,
right. That's talk about tradition. Haka.
That's a neat thing. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Here's the tangent further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the haka in itself is an amazing tradition meant to intimidate and basically show the seriousness,
the way
a lot of people could consider the way the haka is done is just so cool to me. I love the haka. It's just, there's nothing more interesting to me than seeing somebody's pre-fight, you know, ritual.
Oh, yeah.
And the haka is like whole team of people doing it.
Yeah.
So even cooler to me.
Yeah. I think of like, again, to take it back to like something people understand these days, boxing, you know, there's always the walkout, right? Or MMA as well. There's always the walkout, you know, Joe, the blow.
Yeah.
Schmo, you know, and here's his walkout music and his shiny pajama robe. And, you know, he's doing the punches in the air and he's shadow boxing and shaking his neck and dancing. And he hugs his coaches and he shows his mouth and they knock the cup. And it's just one of those. Just one of those things, man. But it's the pre-fight. It's not as cool as a haka, but everybody has them. I know when I like spar that I tap gloves, I walk away. It's not planned. It's just I noticed that I have this habit. I tap gloves, I walk away. I don't look at the person until it's time again. Like I'll tap gloves about 10 seconds before the round actually starts. I'll walk away. I'll look away. I'm not looking at him. Then I'll tap gloves one more time right at the start of the round. It's just that's my – and during this time, I'm beating my forehead with my foreknuckle. I don't really – I think that's just reminding myself to keep my hands up, like a little tick I do just to remind myself to keep my hands up. But, yeah, like that's – and I don't do that any of that on purpose except for the tapping of the gloves, you know. Because I like to show respect and things. But, yeah, like, that's every round. That's my little ritual. And I always tap gloves several seconds before. I always do my little stupid little lap where I'm beating on my forehead. And then I'm going to tap gloves with you again and watch out for my kicks. What's your pre-fight ritual, Alan? Do you have a pre-fight ritual?
Not really. I mean, I guess.
Or do you have some pre-fight nuances?
I always try to salute before we do anything.
Sure.
So that's about it, though. I'm not really. I do the courage and honor sort of tap of the chest, touch to the forehead, thing. Which is like an amalgam of a bunch of different
salutes
that I've learned throughout, you know, my time fighting.
Yeah, when it's a saber fight, it's for me, it's sword to the forehead, sword straight down. Unless I'm one-handing, then it's sword up, sword out, you know, Dooku style. But yeah, interesting. Right. Keep going.
Yeah, that's a good point to say because there is different salutes.
For different styles of sword
fighting. For different styles of sword fighting, there's different salutes
for that each I teach of the seven forms.
For different forms, so there's all sorts of fun stuff from there. So it's a thing that I find very interesting too. Like whenever I go somewhere else and I try to take in a class, I try to clear my mind of my preconceived notions of what I think is going to happen.
I agree with that. That helps me a lot over the years.
Yeah, and then I go, okay, well, how do you guys do it? Because I can only imagine how I'm doing it and how crazy I look when I do it to you who's only done it this way. You know what I mean? So I'm not very stuck in one tradition, and I have my teachers to thank for that because like I said before, I've come up in like a martial arts university where there was a bunch of different styles being taught to me at the same time from different parts of China, even though, you know, I basically had like a bunch of different subjects, but each subject was a different style of martial arts.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting it's an interesting thing to look at whenever you go to a different school. So, for example, the HEMA school that I go to, you know, there's besides like before you fight, there's no bowing, there's no anything like that.
They don't salute either.
No, they'll salute before a fight, but they don't like.
There's stop. No like bowing in.
Yeah.
Do you still bow?
Yes, of course. It is. It's
it's ingrained. Like whenever there's an elevation change on the floor, I will bow.
Let me ask you this. I'll just quickly.
I'll go to like a restaurant and bow.
Yes. Okay. That's what down. I was going to do. I have bowed crossing parking lots so many times. Yeah. Bowed to the parking lot. Like,
yep.
Ridiculous, actually. But I'm glad to know that I'm not the only one now.
No, well, that just means that you're used to being in the dojo. Yeah. Right? And that's okay.
And I'm constantly bowing in and out of the cage.
Right.
Somebody asked me the other day, they were like, do you bow every time? I was like, maybe like 95% of the time. Yeah. Like, I'm sure there's like, if I'm going out for a drink of water, I might forget. But like, yeah, like if I'm entering or leaving for any amount of time, like, yeah, I don't know. And like you said, it's ingrained is maybe an understatement, like etched into the fibers of my skin, you know, I'm going to fold and I'm going to bow. Even if it's just a little head bow, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Well, again, it's part of, at least as far as I was taught, it's part of just being aware of where you are. So when we bow at the door, you know, the scripted line basically is you're taking everything that happened outside these doors and leaving them out there.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, you're taking a moment and making your body reset in order for you to look around and be aware of what's going on here and now and not, you know, the wacky world that's behind you. So that's kind of like, you know, also protecting the sacred space sort of idea, and making sure that the school is a place of sanctuary and a place of peace is that kind of like, okay. Everything stays out there. In here, it's just here is where it is. You know, here's where I work on me or whatever.
That's
the thought.
I will say, I've noticed that little bit you're just describing is something that a lot of MMA fighters do observe, and wrestlers as well. Strict wrestlers, just the act of like when I come in the gym and when I lace up my wrestling shoes. Like, that's what I'm here for. Don't bother me about life, right? Like, this is what I'm here for.
Well, it's the same at the gym, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people don't want to socialize there.
Right. That's exactly. When they're lifting weights or on the treadmill, like, don't talk to me about your, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I'm not here to socialize. I'm here to work on me.
Now, we can socialize if you're here for the same purpose, right? Like while we're sparring, we can socialize. While we're grappling, while we're wrestling, we can talk about some things. Right. But we're still here to do techniques, and it's just it's almost like a sobriety that overcomes people as they wrap their hands up or as they get their sabers out from their bag and get their fencing helmet ready.
And think of that is a sacred ritual, right? That is a ritual and a tradition that happens.
Yeah.
A tradition with yourself. You put yourself in that space where
congratulations, you know, nothing, now you're a martial artist, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't necessarily have to do that in martial arts. I mean, yoga does the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless you are, you know, not into, you know, being courteous to your fellow humans, we put our phones on silent while we go to the movie theater. You know, there's a bunch of things that we do to not be that guy, you know, in the middle of whatever it is that we're doing. So a lot of this stuff that we're talking about is basically showing your care, showing your courtesy to others as you try to work on yourself, because you can golden rule it all you want. You know, that is actually who you are is how you are. And if how you are is respectful to the space where you work on you, then that's what you want other people to do as well.
Well, and it bleeds into other areas of life. I notice for sure, like, I'm sorry, Gen Zers. I don't mean to come down on you in this moment, but I do notice that nowadays there are fewer younger people doing things like holding the door, doing things like saying please and thank you, even just like hello. Like when I go to the gas station, like when I worked at a gas station years ago, like it was required. I could have lost my job for not saying hello within 10, 20 seconds of any customer walking through the door. And that is not, that was not a martial art, but having grown up in martial arts, when it came time for me to get that job, that part was easy for me. Like, okay, here comes an old lady from pump six. She can't walk all the way up here to get her gas. I can clearly see her seven artificial hips are having trouble. So
that's a lot of hips.
So, you know, just the act of like going outside to that person. Hello, ma'am. How are you? Do you need some gas? Would you like me to go in and get it for you so that you don't, you know, like those types of things are kind of missing or they're more vacant. And those are the types of things like in our kids class, I am constantly on the kid, like, you know, hello, coach. How are you, coach? But it's returnable. Like, if you call me hi, coach, or hi, sir, well, guess what I'm going to call you? Hi, sir. Hi, ma'am. I'm going to do it to you, too, because it's a returnable, renewable resource, that respect. And I think that's kind of what you're getting at.
Well, it's stuff like that is first and foremost self-respect, right? Because you can never give anybody anything that you know, don't have.
That's important. I don't think about that enough myself.
So whenever someone does that, you know, it always is good, because now you can see, oh, this person actually sees this as important. Yes, this is something that will be important to them. So that's kind of the other thing, right? Is if you see a tradition that you like, see a tradition that you want to follow. Let's, for example, say that you want to learn Kali, right?
Sure.
And in Kali, depending on the style of Kali that you're doing, there is a, it's called an orashon, also known as a prayer, at the beginning. Now, they don't care if you don't believe in Jesus Christ or whatnot. They just basically say, hey, there's something out there that's bigger than us, and we are going to say thank you for the opportunity to train. And that's it. That's, you know, the gist of it. It's not saying that you will, you know, go up the mountain and sacrifice your firstborn. It doesn't say any of the wacky stuff. You know, it just says like, hey, you know what? We're taking a moment here and we're saying thank you to the people that came before us, the people that will come after us if we do this right, and everything like that. And that's it.
Yeah, and a lot of martial arts have that as well. A lot of schools too will just do that, just to like, they'll just add that in because it's a good idea.
Yeah. Well, it's just, again, a moment to stop and go have that moment of gratitude and that moment of solemnness to what you're doing, because it's not something that you do all the time. And again, not an East-West thing, because we also do it in the West. You know, how many times have we stopped to look at the football players, you know, praying to God that they win the game and, you know, making God choose? But it's kind of the thing, right? Your traditions define a little bit of your martial art, right? And for some, it defines their whole martial art. So, for example, like Capoeira, it was an outlawed martial art, so everything is dance, right?
Right.
So there's very, very little time where you'll see a martial artist doing capoeira when there's no music, right?
Yeah, the music in and of itself, like that's like part of the curriculum of the martial art, the instruments and the dance and the singing. That's all part of it.
Exactly. It teaches you breath work. It teaches you all sorts of things. It teaches it teaches you cadence. It teaches you.
Musashi told us we need to be artists of every kind. We need to be Renaissance people.
Right. And the hand that hurts also heals, and the hand that breaks the stone should be able to play the lute afterward. That's a whole another way of looking at things. So if you're looking at traditional martial arts, if you're looking at combative arts, that word art is still in there. You know, if you're looking at sports, there's still a version of ceremony, right? Mm-hmm. Even the highest level sports, even the Olympic Games have ceremonies.
Yep.
You know, that's all the same. Now, if you're looking into it, you respect it and you do it. If you're not too into it, then you probably won't go too far in that. So that's just how it goes.
I'm having fun with this. This conversation's all over the place, and sometimes we just need one of those episodes, right? I don't even know where to go from here, which is fine. You know, we've kind of been all over the place in terms of, we started talking about, you know, American phenomenon of the mixing of martial arts and the nunchuck stuff, and now the traditions of before, after, the respect, all of it. It's as you can tell, if you're listening, but you're not really a martial artist yourself, there's like a lot of good things that can come out of it. It's not, and like I know for a fact that I've had adults in my class who come and as soon as they see that I bow or that I ask people to bow, like I've had to add now to the beginning of my class, like if I have somebody new, like we just bow as a sign of like respect to each other. It's not like a religious thing at all. Like, but you know, some people really did get like, especially when I lived on the East Coast and the religions were more varied, I felt like I had a few more instances of people being like, well, I don't really want to bow if I'm not like the same.
Did you ask them if they would stand during the Pledge of Allegiance or during the Star-Spangled Banner?
No, I mean, usually if I just told them it was like shaking hands, they'd be like, oh, okay, yeah. Well, I understand. Well, but no, yeah, I mean, that's a good...
It's a big thing, but...
That's a good point.
At the beginning of class, just like a baseball game, we're all going to stand up and we're going to take a moment to recognize where we are and what we're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like when we do it for the Star-Spangled Banner, we're going to stand up and bow. And you know what? If you're not in the class... You can do it too.
Right.
Guess what? Everybody is expected to stand during the Pledge of Allegiance or the Star-Spangled Banner before the game, mm-hmm. whether they are part of our country or not. You know, if they are, you know, a foreign dignitary, they're still expected to stand
mm-hmm.
yep. as a sign of respect. So it's like, this is the whole thing. Personal story, because my son just started in martial arts.
Okay.
He and his cousin, who did not grow up in a martial arts family, they're my in-laws. His parents were basically like, "So, what do I stand? What do I say? Hello? How does this work?" And I was just like, "Just do what everybody else does."
Yeah.
If you do what everybody else does, you won't feel out of place, just like funny. Church. And they're like, oh, okay. Because like, there are certain times when people stand up and say, hello, sir, hello, ma'am.
Particularly if you're a Catholic. You're used to that. choreography.
Yeah. And so, like, there's teachers that come in and out, and they say, hello, sir, hello, ma'am. And there's people that they don't do that to, and they're like, I don't understand. And they're like, just go with the flow.
Yep.
You'll get it.
Yeah. You
know? And same thing with any of our martial arts traditions, right?
Yeah.
Even if, and I assure you, they make it more than it is when they do the weigh-ins and they do the face-offs and stuff like that. And
yeah.
Guys try to get under each other's skin.
A lot of that is for drama purposes. They do need to weigh the right weight, but after that, it's a lot of drama.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a couple of guys out there that have fun with it, or, you know, they take selfies with each other, or they just, you know, do a thing. And there's some guys that are just, you know, just plain disrespectful and that. And usually those are the guys that get knocked out. But
karma does have a way of coming around.
Yeah. So whenever we do any of these traditions, you know, whenever we do any sort of mixing of tradition and modernization or sportification, it's important to first off see what the actual intention is. Much like a punch coming your way, you have to understand the intention. You know, is it going to go for your head? Is it going to go for your stomach? Is it even aimed at you? Coming around your way? It's the intention that matters, because that's really the point of it all, is your intention. So if you want to be a martial artist, you know, it's mainly because you have an intention. Mm. And if you understand what that intention is, then it's much easier to find martial art that will work for you. If you just kind of float around without intention, it'll be very hard, very difficult for you to figure out what actually works for you.
And if you're listening to this, your intention might be to find a martial art that involves a lightsaber. So, you should definitely check out our episodes with the Holocron or the Holo Education supplements a few episodes back. But let's put this in the perspective of saber martial arts real quick, because obviously that's the title of the show. But it's a new martial art. It's a new tradition. Mm-hmm. But also a lot of times, depending on where you learn, if you go to a club or a school, or if you're starting your own club or school, it's informed by the traditions of whoever's in charge. Yes. Which could be very unorthodox or could be really, really traditional. But yeah, like, I think that's kind of cool. You know, obviously you'll get people who their background might be very similar to your own, but I think with the sabers, it doesn't really matter which tradition somebody comes from. If there's a little bit of that in there, it's going to benefit the group, in my opinion, or the practitioner. If you're a solo practitioner, maybe find another, I think we've said this way too much, but find another martial art. Like, don't just do the lightsaber stuff. It's okay to just do lightsaber stuff, but especially if you're a solo person, maybe find a dojo or a gym to get into, or a dojang or whatever. Because I think you're going to be missing a little bit of that tradition. You're going to be missing a little bit of lineage, I guess, you know, which there isn't in saber martial arts, but there is kind of becoming now, right? Like, people who've learned from me, they've been learning from me, or they learned from me over the course of a few years, right? So that's creating a minor lineage. Phoenix Saber's been around for several years, so that's creating a little minor lineage, right? And then those people dabble with, you know, this event here, that event there, and that lineage does develop. There is a tradition now. The act of saluting. You go into almost any lightsaber fighting competition, and almost everybody's going to be saluting.
Right.
I don't even think that was something that really had to be in the rules, though it is often in the rules. I don't even think it needs to be. I think people are just going to do it.
Right.
And that's a tradition that's developed out of a very untraditional martial art. I mean, something that's less than, I mean, barely 20 years old for the oldest saber schools. We're talking barely 20 years old. So, yeah.
2001 is when I started.
Yeah, 2002 for me. That's it. I mean, yeah. So, let's see. I don't even know if we need to talk about anything else, but let's do this. We do have some cool stuff coming up. We have some interesting companies that will be hopefully able to offer some great martial arts products to you guys through us in the near future here. Some things like practice sabers that we really like, equipment, uniforms, things like that, t-shirts. We already do have a t-shirt available. I need to, it was in the episode that has been released by the time you're hearing this. We'll have a link for that duelist jersey or t-shirt that you can wear in tournaments and things.
Click on the link to get the duelist jersey. And if you want a judge's jersey, you actually have to.
You have to request that through us, sabermaoutreach@gmail.com or saber or mastervenable@phoenixsaber.com, and we can give you that link if you need to get that. And then, of course, the goal is very shortly, hopefully here, to be able to give you guys either some sort of discount code or special pricing through our website or something for just the knickknacks you might need. You know, if you want to be able to teach traditional sword forms and you need some wooden practice swords or plastic practice swords, like, those are the types of things that we're hoping to be able to offer you. If you want to get uniforms made with, you know, your logo and the SMA logo on them, those are the kinds of things we'd like to be able to get for you. So, yeah, more on that coming up. And, as a result of that, I'd like to give a shout out this week to, Asian World of Martial Arts in Philadelphia. Great company. They are also the manufacturers of the ProForce demonstration weapons and sparring gear and all kinds of, like, they've been around for a long, long time. Like, I think since the 70s, Asian World's been around. AWMA.com. But that's one of the companies that hopefully we will be able to get you guys some cool gear, good pricing, maybe a discount code, something along those lines, to be able to kind of, I don't want to say add legitimacy, because I think anybody who's doing what we're doing, that's their goal, is to add legitimacy to their programs. But it's nice to have some legit martial arts equipment available to you. So I'd like to give a shout out to them, because they are phenomenal, not just in their products and stuff, but their customer service is great. They're really nice on the phone. You call them and you have questions, they don't make you feel like an idiot about your questions. And I believe everybody that works there is a martial artist. When you call, they say sir, and they say ma'am, and they say please and thank you. And they're just a good group of people. So I believe it was Rich that I spoke to today. Call Asian World, talk to Rich, get some good gear, and then check back with us and get some more. So, Alan, do you have any other shout outs you'd like to give? Because I have a plea for the general audience as well, if you, they'll indulge me.
Oh, sure. I don't have anything. I mean, shout out to Jillian Fraser, who basically designed the doula shirt. That's about all I got right now.
She's awesome. Okay, so here's my plea for the general audience. If you have listened to us in the past, you're aware that we used to be sponsored by, paired up with, affiliated with Key Sabers, Combat Sabers. And that company has since gone defunct, we'll say. That being said, if anybody either makes or knows somebody who makes 3D printed chassis for Key Sabers, would be interested in maybe making some chassis for some old Key Sabers or old Ing Chow armory sabers, let us know. SaberMAOutreach@gmail.com, because I have a couple of hilts that could use chassis, Alan. I know you do as well. Mm-hmm. But also, we are looking for a sabersmith or two who is really willing to stand behind a high quality combat ready product. I know we have a few affiliates who make sabers. I don't believe they're all equipped to mass produce. However, if they're listening, they can go ahead and shout me out. They know how to get a hold of me. But yeah, Alan, would you disagree? I think we're looking for some high quality sabers these days.
I mean, I'm always looking for a high quality saber.
It's harder and harder to find things that are not, what's the term, shelf queens. Which, again, there's nothing wrong with that. But you're not going to be able to fight well with a shelf queen. That thing's going to die on you. So
if you feel like I could drop kick your saber across the room and it still works to 100% capacity, that's my idea of a combat saber.
Yeah. Yeah, or drop it down like some concrete stairs, throw it into traffic. Yeah, like that's what I'm looking for. And the older, I mean, the Key Sabers, the Ing Chow Sabers of a few years ago, that's that's the type of durability we were working with. So that's why I say, you know, if you're, I know Custom Saber Shop makes like chassis and things. Shout out to Custom Saber Shop. That's good stuff too. Best blades on the general market, in my opinion, come from Custom Saber Shop. But I'm curious. Maybe they make a chassis or something that would fit. But yeah, man, like that's the big thing. You have to have a chassis for those sabers, or you have to be a sabersmith and be able to fill my hilt with goodness. So hit us up if you are a sabersmith and you might be interested in taking on some extra work for some people who like to swing them at other people. And like I said, the big thing is you need to be able to stand behind quality. They don't need to be pretty. They need to work well, and they need to take a beating. And
it's a bonus if they are pretty.
that's the thing. Yeah. If you got a little lathe talent, we're into it. But yeah, blade retention is a must. We use heavy grade blades almost exclusively. Some of our schools do use medium grades, but yeah, we use heavy grade blades almost. So these things need to stand up to some punishment. But hit us up, SaberMAOutreach@gmail.com and or MasterVenable@PhoenixSaber.com. You can even CC us in the same message, and because we're going to text each other right afterwards anyway. But yeah, I mean, I think it's something we've been lacking for the better part of 2 years now, is a really good quality saber that kind of fits the mold for everybody. That's the thing I really liked about the Persuader from Key Sabers, was it was a very generic bread and butter hilt that fits every style of saber fighting. Unfortunately, you can't get them anymore, and that company's not existent. So I'm into it. I'm into ideas. So hit us up. What do you think, Alan? Is that a good plea? Should I delete that from the episode, or are we keeping that?
I think that's good.
Good. Awesome. Because I didn't feel like deleting it. Oh, weirdly interesting, kind of all over the place conversation. I loved it. We have a couple things on our agenda in the coming weeks. One of them being a conversation about Juyo and Vapid, Form 7. Mm-hmm. One of them being a conversation with Kay and potentially a special guest. Mm-hmm. Another one being hopefully a movie commentary with Courtney. That might be a couple of episodes, but Courtney's been real busy lately. So, Courtney, if you're listening, don't hit me up. We have a movie commentary we want to do with him. And, Alan, I have a couple of things that I want to do with you, of course.
Sure.
And then the last thing that I want to keep people apprised of is I do want to do another Hollow Education supplement here in the next, you know, sometime in May, because we did... I guess it was the beginning of April. So then now I'd like to do in May as well. And that will either be pre-recorded podcast style with some companion videos like we did before, or it will be some sort of YouTube or Instagram live where you might even be able to participate yourself.
Right.
So sabermartialarts.life at SMA Foundation on Instagram, YouTube, Saber Martial Arts Foundation, and bring your own saber.
Bring your own saber. This party's over.